As National Treasury points out in its 2019 economic strategy document, the Tito paper, as it's become known, creating an environment in which SMMEs can thrive is inextricably linked to creating conditions in which all businesses can thrive. And one of the main challenges to the growth of small and medium-sized businesses and junior mining exploration in particular is access to equity finance. Now, to assist these sectors in terms of equity finance, government implemented a tax incentive for investors to invest in these businesses that has really blossomed over the last few years, since 2015 really. It's called Section 12J. And as COVID-19 causes our fiscal deficit to bulge even further, what role should and could incentives such as Section 12J play in supporting SMEs through this crisis? Well, to talk about this, let's welcome our panel today. Anil Govind, Executive Director of Innovate Alternative Assets, John T. Sachs, partner of Geltech, Andrew Wellstead, a very well-respected tax lawyer and a partner at CMS RM Partners, Inc., and Pablo Fatidis, the engine of Auric Business Accelerator. Anil, kick us off here. Quick refresher to start. What exactly is the Section 12J incentive all about? It's really blossomed, as I said, over the last 5 years. But just remind viewers what the intent and the spirit of Section 12J really is.
Firstly, I think 12J has been long overdue in South Africa. The main purpose of 12J was to help companies with, you know, funding, as you alluded to. And it was started in 2009. In 2013, the rules were made a bit more favorable for companies to implement some of the 12J, and effectively a client investor gets a tax deduction when they do a 12J investment up to their marginal tax rate, depending on their personal tax. And then on the company side, they get the funding. So it's a win-win situation, and it allows the company, especially in the earlier times of their growth, to get the funding they require.
And John T, just recently there was a paper released by the Section 12J Association, a survey into the size of the industry, the sort of impact that 12J has had so far. It really is over the last 5 years that it's blossomed. What are the highlights of that survey? Just how big is the Section 12J market? How much dry powder is out there? How much has been raised? Just tell us a little bit more about the success or otherwise so far of 12J.
Firstly, Mike, I must applaud the 12J Association. They've really done an impressive job preparing a report which was sent to Parliament and to Treasury. So they've done an unbelievable job. Some of the highlights is the industry is approximately 10 billion rand. All private investors funding 12J investments. Of the 10 billion rand, approximately 5.5 billion has been invested into South African businesses. Average investment size approximately 15 million rand. But excitingly, the number of jobs that have been created is quite relevant. Over 10,500 jobs supported, of which half of that is permanent. A number of jobs created outside of your major metropolitans. Large portion of employment is in the non-white or European sector. So a lot of South Africans are being employed, which is very positive to see out of this incentive. And what we're also seeing is capital being made available to South African businesses that desperately need it, particularly during COVID.
And those are very important points. All of those 10,500 jobs in an environment where we saw from the latest labor stats out last week, this economy is shedding jobs hand over fist. It's one of the standout success stories. My guess, Andrew, would be that Treasury at this time would be looking at Section 12J and wondering what sort of return it's got. Because obviously this is, it's a cost to the fiscus, Section 12J, and whether or not at this time, as we know, Treasury is very fiscally constrained, it's worth continuing with the program. Would you say that the cost and the benefits of 12J, or the benefits outweigh the costs?
Yes, sir. It is a cost to the fisc because they're partially helping fund part of the investment. But I think it's probably going to, as John T said, it's going to be more relevant than ever now, because where the businesses are going to be impacted most by the COVID crisis that we've had are small SMEs. And that's exactly what 12J is aimed at funding. where are you going to get this friendly funding? Where is there going to be stimulus? There's going to be a number of businesses that have closed down, joblessness, etc. So, you know, government often talks investment, talks international investment, etc. In line with investment, this has been a very successful stimulus to foster investment in a sector of the economy that needed it, and post-COVID it's going to need it more than ever. So I'm hoping the Treasury is in sync with the rest of the government and is taking on board the message that what's going to get the economy going, and in fact what's going to fix the tax base, is not trying to collect tax from the existing taxpayers, it's to create new businesses and new taxpaying entities, new taxpayers. And something like 12J in my mind absolutely assists with that.
Now, of course, what we have seen is a deep erosion of the tax base, thanks not only to COVID. I think the economy was struggling pre-COVID. That's just been accelerated. Now, Pablo, there's an important distinction here, and I think Andrew alluded to it, that we often talk about SMEs as this homogenous group. But really what Section 12J speaks to is what I and many others refer to as the gazelles. These are your high-growth firms that exist under the SME umbrella, but really have the potential to become big employers here and to scale quickly. Just how important is it for government to be focusing on the gazelles at this time?
Well, Michael, I'd be interested to know what other growth strategy is available, because I can't see any other growth strategy at all. If you think about where the growth has been gotten in the economy at the moment, very, very large corporate entities rely on economic growth as a whole in order to rise and lift their earnings. Very, very small businesses out there are being decimated at the moment by the COVID shutdown. So the only growth options left are really to look at that mid-tier SME market. And certainly what I'm seeing there is this. Over the last 80 days, during the shutdown period, an extensive amount of digitization took place in amongst the growth-orientated gazelles, as you put them. When I look at what's needed to now accelerate the growth in those businesses, there are effectively three things: an investment in technology, an investment in people, and an investment in marketing. So debt funding never lends itself to that form of investment or growth. Equity funding is the only source for it. Banks don't offer any equity funding whatsoever, and the Section 12J tier of companies out there are the only options for those businesses to acquire the appropriate funding in the appropriate manner in order to grow and start resolving some of our economic malaise.
I think you touched on a very important point there, Pablo, the difference here between debt and equity. And we've seen Treasury's 200 billion rand loan guarantee scheme, which is taking on debt, and it hasn't been very well subscribed. Why do you think equity is so much more superior during a time of crisis than debt?
You know, I've been watching with a lot of interest around, we've got clients in the US, and I've been watching how different states have behaved differently around opening up post-COVID. The states that didn't do the right thing, like Texas at the moment, are experiencing massive surges in infections. What that simply says is this: the virus is here until it's not. And until it's not, the environment remains uncertain. You can't raise debt, Michael, when you have no certainty of revenues, because debt immediately, A, you have to fund and service, and B, debt burns cash. You need the cash burn to occur in the growth of the business rather than in the servicing of the debt. You do not do so, and it's enormously imprudent to do so, unless you have a fairly good sense of what steady state revenues look like so you can fund the debt that you've raised.
And we see it in the listed space as well. There's been a flurry of capital raisings at the moment to support that at this time. And Neil, how do you see Section 12J being employed as a positive force as we look to catalyze growth in the South African economy?
Yeah. I think the first part I would think that's positive on a 12J is that the 12J companies has already offered the investor 8% return, 8.4% return, from the tax rebate, yeah. So the pressure and the return is not at the same level as a normal private equity play. And as Pablo has alluded to, you know, these companies need time. We instead of trying to estimate whether it's a few months, let's talk 18 months, you know. and they need time to recover. And effectively, an equity injection will make a big difference at a reasonable rate, rather than an angel investor trying to take, you know, a 30-40% return, which may allow the principal not to have much left at the end. You know, so in the end, I really feel the private equity space, and especially the 12J space, allows a decent return where the principal is not obliged to this big equity loss, and also allows them time to recover, which is what they need. Yeah.
And I know, Andrew, that Treasury placed a cap on investments by individuals and companies recently, and was also concerned about some abuse taking place within the structure. Many structures are geared towards property schemes are not really in the spirit of supporting true VC. How much of that kind of abuse has taken place, and do you see that sorting itself out with Treasury keeping a very beady eye on this particular incentive?
Yeah, look, it's a very important balance, because as a fiscal authority, you create a dispensation, okay? And then what happens is taxpayers do push the limits. They explore the limits of that dispensation. And we saw what they were, the old movie schemes, the old forestry schemes. Internationally, you can look wherever there's been a dispensation, it's been explored, or the limits have been explored by taxpayers. Let me say that. The problem is, if you're going to give a dispensation, you need to give something that's real. And one of the things we've seen from a technical perspective is 12J has been, over time, tinkered with and added to. It's now a very, very complicated section. It's getting quite difficult to administer. So again, what government needs to do is to come up with one single philosophy. We want investment, okay? And then make sensible rules that perhaps err on the side of one or two people getting away with things. This is my personal view, but getting away with things that weren't in the spirit, but again, creating funding in a time where that funding is going to be sorely needed. So I do think that, you know, there have been, I'm not a great proponent of the spirit of the law. The law has no spirit. It's written down in words. I have no problem with sensible drafting, but I think the section, if it is extended, and it is my hope that it will be, I think the section needs to be revitalized and seen as a really important tool to get investment back into that sector of the economy. And instead of this trend of trying to put up new fences around 12J, let's just have a sensible section that, in the main, drives investment in that sector of the economy.
John T, just for a second, take me through the impact that COVID-19 has actually had on some of the funds in the Geltech stable. You've got the Finity Anchor Fund, you've got Zimbali Capital, and there's a very new JV, an exciting JV with Pavlo's Auric, which we'll come to. But just firstly, what impact has COVID-19 had on these funds, and how has being a Section 12J investor really benefited a lot of these investee companies?
So, you know, we've been very fortunate as a fund manager not to have a significant, or if any at the moment, impact on our underlying investments. And that's across our funds. And it's not because we, you know, the smartest or the best in the game, but we've just been really fortunate that the businesses we've invested in have done particularly well. And some of our results will be released in the next couple of days. And we've actually seen growth during this time. So we've been really lucky. Where we're struggling, and I think the rest of the market is new investment opportunities. You know, before we fundraise, we ensure that we have a sufficient pipeline of opportunities to invest in. And if I look at Infinity as an example, our pipeline went from 250 million rand to around 30 million rand. So a lot less businesses which really meet our mandate, and you know, we foresee it being a good opportunity to invest in. However, we've just made an investment just over a week ago into a company called Rise Telecoms, which is in the infrastructure, the fiber infrastructure sector, and that's an exciting investment opportunity. And you know, fiber or internet usage during lockdown has probably been higher than ever. So there are investment opportunities, but it takes a lot of time and effort to find them, particularly during COVID. I think what many fund managers are struggling with at the moment is underperforming investments, where now they need to resuscitate businesses which they had hoped were going to generate multiples in returns, and now are really bleeding, and they need to resuscitate these businesses. Fortunately, we're not in that position. We're looking for opportunities. We've got some capital still to invest, but it's a challenging environment. If you look at you know, 2019 investors, 60% of the market or investors invested into property-backed Section 12J funds, investing largely in hotels. Now, you can imagine such a large portion of an annual fundraise going into hotels. Those investors are, you know, they're not going to see returns this year, if not in the long run, because the hospitality sector has really been hit hard. So as a sector as a whole, I think, and there are a number of funds that are going to struggle. It's just unfortunate. It's got nothing to do with their ability as a fund manager. I think it's just the sector that they find themselves in. From our perspective, it's really been business as normal in an unusual environment. And, you know, we're fighting to find good investment opportunities.
But to Pablo's earlier point, though, at least it's equity funding and not debt funding, which would have sunk many businesses through a crisis period like this. At least they can lean on a big brother with further calls for equity if required. Anil, as you view it, what do you see as some of the challenges in the market? And dovetailing with what Jonty was saying here, I suppose finding the right deal to do in an environment where COVID has created all of this uncertainty must be the big challenge. How much dry powder is actually out there waiting to be deployed? Or just unmute yourself there, Anil.
Yeah, we made a call at Innovate that, you know, we wouldn't invest in any property or tourism assets in the 12J space or in any other opportunity, because we had a view of the market prior to the COVID. And I think the main issue when it comes to this is that, firstly, all companies need time. Certain industries do better than others, and you know one needs to be selective as to which opportunities one takes. I think Jonty's view of having some patience is not a bad one in a time like this. Those opportunities would come, and those companies need time. You have good businesses in a time like this also. You know, we're very technology and healthcare biased, and there's other companies that do well in this environment, and you know, platforms or anything like that. So things like fiber, what Jonty alluded to. So you got to find the gems that actually make sense in this environment. And there's also other companies that are more staples and that which need time. And I think at the end of the day, if you find a sustainable business that can still survive in this time, I think, you know, it's still good. Equity is the best vehicle in my mind to allow that carry over into a period which is really a normal period, not a COVID infected period, let's call it.
Right. Do you know how much has been raised and deployed at the moment? Maybe Jonty, you might have the stats in front of you in terms of how much dry powder might be out there chasing deals.
Yeah, there's approximately 4.5 billion rand of investors' capital sitting across funds, you know, across sectors, renewable energy. There's a significant amount in private equity. There's a large amount in hospitality, and then asset-backed investments like asset rental, etc. So there's capital across many sectors available in these Section 12J investments, and you know, good businesses should really be knocking on their doors to try and attract some of their capital.
And equally, I think investors would be watching quite closely if they've invested with fund managers to see how they're deploying capital at this time, because you've got the sense that a lot was raised and a lot of guys were sitting on capital, and that's potentially not the best strategy. Andrew, as you look at the scheme, it's coming to its sort of end of life cycle. There's a sunset clause in it. And I know the industry is lobbying intensely for it to be increased, and one needs to obviously be mindful that everyone in this panel would like to see it increased. But why would you like to see it increased? What do you think are the key benefits here that Treasury needs to look at a time, as I said to you earlier, where the cupboards are bare? And I think the finance minister and his team are going to be rolling over every single incentive and cent to see whether or not they're getting bang for buck.
I've always had a strongly held view that South Africa has been hampered by a very small tax base traditionally. Okay, we've got a small recognized corporate tax base, and then we've got the personal taxpayers who are registered. And one of our problems, for the last at least 10 years, when we've made comments on the budget, we've always said, oh, the minister's got a real problem. You know, things are tight, things are not looking great. etc. We all know the story since 2008. One of the things that's never really manifested is let's grow the tax base, let's grow the economy. Now, there are a number of reasons for that historically, okay, political and otherwise. But at this point in time, trying to tax the existing tax base that is under pressure, businesses are closing down, people are unemployed, it's going to lead to nowhere. So if you're saying, with people that are on our radar, we want to extract as much as we can, that's one philosophy. I'm proposing a different philosophy. Let us grow others. Let us not just squeeze the rock that we've got, the blood out of the rock. Let's try and regrow the economy. And that's never going to be more important than in a COVID than the post-COVID period, whenever that may be. And as has been really well properly expressed on this in this discussion, you're not going to have limitless sources of funds. So this is a great source of funding. It's a great incentive for taxpayers to put money in because it's got a built-in return already based on the tax relief. To me, this is something that really, really has to be the program going forward. Grow the economy, grow the tax base, and with funding as scarce as it is, 12J becomes all the more relevant.
And the figures that John G was speaking to, 10,500 jobs, 10 billion private capital raised, certainly speaks to a very successful scheme. Pablo, what is this partnership that has been recently announced with Geltech entail? I believe it's a JV on a particular fund. Just give me the details.
Yes, it is. You know, Michael, for some time, we've been constantly frustrated in our core business. Our core business is working with private business owners to substantially grow their businesses. And the frustration has come about by the inability of funding institutions to provide growth funding. If you think about what it takes to build the business and you get a business on a growth trajectory, a smart business owner first exhausts all their own sources of funding. It's off balance sheet funding. But you do get to a point where if you want to maintain aggressive growth rates, you need to source funding from the outside. And again, in those instances, if a business is built right, that funding should see itself being applied typically to technology, to talent, and to marketing. Because if you built the business correctly, your foundation is well invested and you have a growth focus. In those instances, the traditional funders, through no fault of theirs or anyone else's, constrained by a whole lot of complicated prudential requirements, are unable to provide uncollateralized funding. And that's where private equity, or rather equity funding, becomes important. In the same instance, because we have a very wide base of clients, we're sitting now with about 570 businesses that we're working with. We can identify not only the behavioral traits, but also the growth rates in those businesses with a good understanding on who has the ability to adapt to the changes that the market has brought about and who can actually deliver on targets. So the joint venture with Geltech was to raise the fund and introduce tranche-based equity funding, which not only limits the exposure to default, but it creates a series of milestones at relatively low cost against which a business knows if I'm chasing a 36, 37, 42, 45% compound annual growth rate, I have a source of funding that I can draw upon, and it's been drawn upon, cognizant of my current history, knowing where the endpoints are going, because it can be measured in each and every instance. So we established the fund, we've raised the fund, we're actively looking now to deploy the fund, and the COVID environment has brought about some really interesting changes, because the nature of the businesses we're investing in are growth-minded in the sense that they recognize what brought them to their success pre-COVID will be very different to what leads their success post-COVID in terms of the lockdown. It's those changes now that we're investing the funding into, to institutionalize those changes, to maintain them for this post-lockdown economy.
Absolutely, to be able to exploit those opportunities as the landscape has shifted. Just in conclusion, got about 30 seconds to go, Jonty. Do you see this being extended beyond the sunset date, I think of June 2021? I know Treasury's currently considering what's going on. What have you heard?
My personal view is I think it will be extended for a number of the reasons mentioned in this discussion today. But if you look at the stats that the 12-year association have revealed, and the numbers are really impressive, for an incentive that's been around since 2009, really only took off, as Anil mentioned, a couple of years ago. And within such a short period of time, over 10 billion rand being invested. And this is now a sector that's completely funded by the private sector. You know, but also managed. You know, you've got private equity fund manager or fund managers managing underlying investments. So I think it will be extended. The question is what amendments will come in place that will, you know, limit the incentive more, potentially some asset classes being removed, for example, hospitality. So the jury's out, and we're hoping to find out within the next month or so.
Right. Well, one certainly hopes that Treasury is listening to Andrew's comments about simplifying and streamlining the process. I think at this time we need it more now than ever to spark an economic recovery. That was John T. Sachs of Geltech, who was joined around the table by Anil Govind, Executive Director of Innovate Alternative Assets. We also had Andrew Wellstead, tax lawyer at CMS RM Partners, and Pablo Fatides, the CEO of Auric Business Accelerator.